Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to the Chemist Corner Podcast for Friday, January 6, 2012. Welcome to Chemist Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, cosmetic chemist, scientist, and goal-making maniac. Chemist Corner is a podcast about cosmetic science and is broadcast to help educate, entertain, and inspire current and future cosmetic scientists. The information and opinions discussed on Chemist Corner are those of the hosts and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect those of any past, present, or future employers. Well, hello, everybody. Happy New Year. It's the first show of the new year, and I'm excited to be back. I hope you enjoyed your holidays as much as I did. I had a great time, and I always enjoy a good December. But I really love this time of year because it gives me a chance to reflect on what I did the year before and to create a list of goals that I want to accomplish in the upcoming years. I am very goal-oriented, and I keep track of a lot of things, like how far I run, how many podcasts I do, how many sodas I drink. I probably keep track of too many things. This year, I tried to pare down my goal list, but because I usually have too many, but I still am over 100 goals for the year, so it's probably more than I'll be able to get to, but I'd rather have a lot than have too few. We'll see how many I can get done anyway. Anyway, one of them is to record 30 episodes of this podcast, so look for lots of talking in the coming year. On today's show, we feature an interview with cosmetic chemist Alex Westerberg from Cosmarts, the home of creative cosmetic experts in Europe. We will also be looking at a few cosmetic science stories in the news and discussing how you go about labeling a cosmetic product. So let's get right into it. First up, some recent industry news stories that may affect cosmetic formulators. A story I saw about the upcoming animal testing ban of cosmetics in Europe. In Europe, regulations are that 2013, their animal testing will be banned. A European group said that the Safety Commission is likely to issue an exemption from the animal testing ban for products that contain significant added value. While the industry tries to come up with animal testing alternatives, there still aren't replacements for everything. For example, there are no animal alternative testing for repeated dose toxicity, reproductive toxicity, and toxicokinetics. The exemption will no doubt be for big companies who can come up with some rationale that their product is significant added value to the market. I would be curious to see what kind of cosmetic product would fall under this category, though. I think the real point of the story is just a reminder that animal testing is still part of the cosmetic industry, and it's not because the industry wants to keep that kind of testing around. And in fact, I don't know anybody who would want to do animal testing if we didn't have to. It's really because there are not alternatives for all the different types of tests that you have to run. There are certainly some animal testing alternatives, and those are being used and reducing the number of animal tests that are done, but we don't have alternatives for everything. The overriding principle in cosmetic manufacturing is that you cannot produce unsafe products. And so until there are alternative tests that replace animal models completely, animal testing will continue. Here's a story about the French. I like the French and their reaction to all things cosmetic. The French are really leading the way in making things more difficult for cosmetic formulators. There is a bill going through their government designed to ban the use of parabens in cosmetics. This is despite the fact that the independent EU group, the Science Committee on Consumer Products, recently reviewed the data on parabens and concluded that there was no link between parabens and cancer and that it did not pose a significant risk when used in cosmetics. Now the French agency is suggesting the limiting of aluminum in cosmetics. According to the French Health Product Safety Agency, they want the concentration of aluminum in cosmetics to be reduced to a maximum of 0.6%. Now, currently, antiperspirants are allowed, at least in the United States, are allowed for use levels up to 20%, and so that you would use compound like aluminum chlorohydrate to make an effective antiperspirant. The French suggested level of 0.6%, I doubt would have any benefit for a product to be an antiperspirant, so that seems like if you pass that rule, you're essentially going to eliminate that antiperspirant market. It seems the French follow the precautionary principle, which states that any compound should be banned or severely limited in use if there is any theoretical way that it can harm people. The precautionary principle does not require actual evidence before taking action. Their philosophy is that you take action before the evidence, as long as there's a suggestion. This kind of non-science-based conclusions really bug me. It also makes formulating cosmetics much more difficult. If this reduction in aluminum compounds in cosmetics goes through, that will pretty much kill the antiperspirant market. Sure, it might spur innovation in some other area, but more likely it'll just lead to people doing without. Of course, maybe shirts of the future will come with built-in sponges and replace the whole notion and need for antiperspirants. Now, the French aren't alone. I don't mean to single out the French. There are regulations like this that affect cosmetic chemists all over the world. It's just really difficult to keep up, and it's up to cosmetic chemists to work with governments so that they have cosmetic regulations that make sense scientifically. I'm going to do a little something different on these. I was perusing some of the science feeds, and there are just a few stories that I saw which could lead to some different effect on cosmetics, or maybe they'll make their way into your cosmetics one day. So, first story I saw was dried licorice root fights the bacteria that cause tooth decay and gum disease. Researchers found two licorice compounds, licoricidin and licoricoflavin A, were effective antibacterial substances. These substances killed two of the major bacteria responsible for dental cavities and two of the bacteria that promote gum disease. So if toothpaste makers are looking for a new marketing ingredient to add, licorice just might be it. And perhaps eating licorice daily might help you too. And, you know, who knows, maybe if you put in enough of this licorice root extract, you can actually get an effect. Next story comes out of Notre Dame. Notre Dame researchers developed some paint-on solar cells. So researchers there have come up with a paint that can generate electricity when exposed to light using quantum dot technology. Pay attention to quantum dot technology as it might affect cosmetics in the future. This particular paint could have some interesting applications in cosmetics. For example, maybe the packaging could be blinking, made to blink, so as consumers walk by, the package would kind of blink. Or maybe you could make makeup change color on command. There are really just lots of possibilities, so this is an interesting technology. And then the final technology I saw is a third-degree burn treatment hydrogel that helps grow new scar-free skin. The Johns Hopkins researchers have developed a jelly-like material and wound treatment method that, in early experiments on skin damage by severe burns, appeared to regenerate healthy, scar-free tissue. This is really big news for doctors and for burn victims, but I think it's interesting. I think this same technology, there's no reason it shouldn't be able to be used to help rejuvenate aged skin or help in scar treatments of the future. So this is a really interesting technology which cosmetic chemists should be aware of. Today we're going to talk about how to label cosmetic products. My first experience with cosmetic labeling came in college when I turn over the bottle of shampoo and I look at the ingredient list. It was right around the time I was learning how to name chemicals, and I was confused why I couldn't recognize almost any of the ingredients. Well, it turns out that the cosmetic industry doesn't follow the IUPAC system, which is what they teach you in college. It follows a system set up by the Personal Care Products Council, or the PCPC, as described in the INCI Dictionary. INCI stands for the International Nomenclature of Cosmetic Ingredients Dictionary. We have previously written on that, so you can check out Chemist's Corner for information about the INCI and how the naming conventions go. But in today's talk, we're going to talk about you as a cosmetic formulator and manufacturer, how you have to label things. But the ingredient names in your formula are only part of the labeling process. You have to follow labeling rules as laid out by the FDA that affect ingredient order, placement on the label, text size, language, and more. Some of the relevant facts. And I should mention that since this show is worldwide, not just U.S., these rules will, some of these rules apply throughout the world, but these are the rules that, as they apply in the United States. And so that's just a focus there. So first, there's the cosmetic ingredient list. In the U.S., it is a requirement that all cosmetics be labeled with their ingredients. So the LOI, or the list of ingredients, is supposed to be printed on the container, and it needs to follow some rules when listing ingredients. Ingredients above 1% in concentration need to be listed in order of concentration. So when you see that label, the first few ingredients are listed probably in order of concentration. So ingredients that are used at 1% or below, they can be listed in any order. One of the exceptions is color. The colors can be listed at the end, and they usually are listed at the end. The specific names that you have to use are the ones that are found in the INCI dictionary. Now, the FDA regulations haven't caught up to it, but everybody in the industry follows the latest INCI dictionary naming. They change the names a little bit over time, but I think right now the INCI dictionary is in the 11th edition. It might have gone to the 12th edition, I'm not certain. So after you get the right cosmetic ingredient names, you'll have to put it in the package on the proper position. The FDA requires that it be put on the principal display panel, which in most cases means somewhere on the primary package where people can read it. Now, if your product comes packaged in a box, an outer box, you can also put the ingredient listing on that box and then not have it on the specific package. Another thing that people do if their packaging is small, they create an extra piece of paper that can be folded out and the ingredient list can be on there. The font is actually regulated by the FDA. To ensure that the ingredient list is readable, the font requires that it is no smaller than 1/16th of an inch, unless your packaging is really, really small, and then you can go to 1/32nd of an inch. Products that are sold in the United States must be written in English, and you'll see ingredient lists for other countries. They're written in the Usually they're written in the language of the country that they are sold in. The other things that you have to include on your label would include the name of the product. So if it's a shampoo, you have to put that, or a lipstick, you have to put that. You have to put the name of the manufacturer or the distributors. You have to put the address of the manufacturer, which includes the city and the zip code. You also need to put the net contents in the container, and this has to be in fluid ounces, or you can, and you can include the metric labels, so milliliters. If there are any warning statements required, because some cosmetics do require warning statements, then you have to put those warning statements. And for more details about what you have to include specifically, you should check out the FDA website. So you can go to fda.gov/cosmetics, and you can find out all about labeling your cosmetics. So being a formulator is great, and you don't necessarily have to worry about where and how it's placed on the bottle, but you should really, to be an expert cosmetic chemist, you should really know the labeling rules, because your marketing people and your business people are going to come to you and ask you for things like which names of ingredients you go on and what order of ingredients, so you're going to be really involved in putting together these labels, so you should learn what the relevant rules are. All right, today's interview is with Alex Westerberg. Alex comes from Cosmarts, where he enjoys formulating cosmetic products and, oddly enough, knows the do's and don'ts of the European cosmetic legislation. He speaks fluently in 5 different languages, including sign language. He was a self-proclaimed former college dropout before finding cosmetic chemistry. Now he is a highly academically educated cosmetic chemistry rock star in the European cosmetic industry.
Welcome to the program, Alex.
Hi, Perry. It's great to be here.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. We've sort of exchanged emails through the chemist blog, and yeah. I always like to interview cosmetic chemists out there. So why don't we get started? Why don't you just introduce what you're doing right now? So and where you're located, and just some background information.
Okay. Do you want long or short background information?
whatever you like.
Okay. Because I was really, like almost everybody else in the industry, I didn't have plans to become a cosmetic scientist. But in the early 2000s, I was working in an IT company. I was part of the IT bubble, and I was, you know, I was one of those guys who joined the business life at the age of 15 and later on dropped out of college.
Okay.
So, and after the IT bubble, through a very complex chain of events, I found myself in the working in the high-definition television and also with the multi-megapixel digital cameras that were coming out to market. And we started to see a lot of problems with traditional color cosmetics. Because the with the color cosmetics, you really can, if the image is sharp enough or the resolution is high enough, you are starting to see makeup particles, you are starting to see all the flaws in the makeup. And because, of course, you can always do photoshopping, but photoshopping is actually, it's terribly expensive. And if you're talking about the high-definition television, you really can't do photoshopping on a live TV broadcast.
Yeah, so you were originally in the TV side, you were in the electronics side, I was
one of the nerds.
Okay.
I was in the IT business and then on the television side. So, but I had to tackle with the problem and I started to learn something about color cosmetics, because, you know, me being a male, I didn't know anything about color cosmetics, because I haven't used them. So I started reading about the cosmetics and I started to read about cosmetic chemistry. And then the hunger and passion for the information grew larger. And I found out that I was traveling all over the world to participate different kind of courses to learn more about cosmetic chemistry and cosmetic science. And then finally, I settled in studying cosmetic science at the Montfort University, that's in Leicester, in United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they have a program for cosmetic science in their Faculty of Health and Life Sciences. The students who are training to be pharmacists or others are going to be, but I was deciding I'm hitting the cosmetics. I like the galenic forms, you know, the topically applied mm-hmm. applied medication, and actually creating the emulsions more than actually having to do with the drugs.
Yeah, if we could just talk about that program for a moment. So the college was
De Montfort University. It's DMU.
Okay, and is it what's the program? Is it a graduate degree?
It's a certificate of higher education in the cosmetic sciences, and it's organized together with the United Kingdom Society of Cosmetic Scientists. So they are working together with the DMU, the De Montfort University, and the Society of Cosmetic Scientists are working together to have a program where they are academically training people into the cosmetic industry.
Is that part of the online, or is that college, you go to the college for the classes?
I've gone to some classes, yes, but because of my work, I did most part of it actually online. Oh. It's pretty much, I understand that the Farley notes, there is something in United States that offering a master's degree. It's not the Farley Dickinson, it's the another one.
University of Cincinnati does.
Oh, yes, the University of Cincinnati, that's correct. So it's pretty much the same, because they are offering, or they are targeting the people who are already in the cosmetic industry, but want to have an official academic education or training
mm-hmm.
in the field. And the program is pretty large, because it's everything from microbiology to product development to learning about perfumery, even to marketing. So it's 360 degrees of the cosmetic industry, and then you can decide, you know, what interests you the most and where you want to concentrate. But it's pretty much offering the showing you the whole field because the cosmetics is so diverse.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we talked about that, and so you were in the high definition television field, and you saw the problems there, and that got you into cosmetics. So where did you go from there?
Well, I was working in the industry for several companies, and I was doing the De Montfort University at the same time, and I enjoyed it, absolutely loved working in the industry. But after several years, 5-6 years, I was feeling that I really should start my own business, because I saw a lot of opportunities for one-door product development, and because of the economical situations, there was a lot of need for private label consultation. And also here in the European community, there is a lot of troubles with the new cosmetic legislation, and you really have to be a scientist to understand them and to be able to comply with all the legislation. So pretty much I started the business for doing product development, both for brand names and for private label customers, and offering expert advice in the European Union legislation.
Keeping up with regulations is always rough. They change so much, and you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, and it's the last one. It was published in 2009, the latest cosmetic regulation, but that will be making the European community world's most strictest regulated market area for the cosmetic products. I mean, it is very difficult to comply with the rules.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, so what do you do now on the job?
I do everything from product concepts, because we do have marketing intelligence in-house. We're coming up with sometimes pretty wild product concepts that are, because there hardly are no surprises or new kinds of products on the market. So we are trying to answer the problems of the companies who are not able to be creative enough themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it might be the product concept, and we are doing a lot of formulation, because we have an in-house lab where we're doing formulations. I'm also involved in that. And because of the European community regulations are very strict, you have to have a safety assessment for every single product that is imported or made in the European community. So that takes a lot of time, and because there are legal regulations about the person who is capable of doing that or is allowed to do that. And basically you have to be a dermatologist, toxicologist, MD, or something else with higher university degree to be able to do those safety assessments.
Mm-hmm.
So it keeps us very, because the industry is working very hard with the new regulation, because everything has to be ready at the beginning of July 2013. And now it was estimated that there are around 600,000 products on the European market. And basically for a lot of those products, you have to make a new, more detailed safety assessment.
Wow.
So that's a big problem here in Europe right now. And to tell you the truth, there are a lot of companies who haven't even been aware of the change of the regulations, or are just thinking, we're doing it 1 month before or so. And it's, we're just trying, I'm trying to educate people that you really should start working well in advance, because the new legislation requires, for example, accelerated stability testing. It's completely mandatory, and so is preservative efficacy testing. So those tests take at least 1 to 3 months per product, and then right. you have a lot of paperwork to do after that. So it's not something that's done overnight.
Yeah, it's getting much more complicated to launch your own cosmetic line, huh?
Yeah, it's and people here in even the hobbyists in here in Europe are very aware of the regulations, and because we, as you in the United States, have a special, not loophole, but definition about the soap, but soap in the European community is a normal cosmetic product. So technically, if you're a hobbyist who would want to sell your own beautiful soap on the local market, it's you have to have everything safety assessed. You have to have the stability testing, the microbiological challenge testing, everything for the soap.
Yeah, that's a challenge for us, certainly for small people.
It's a very big challenge for the small and medium-sized enterprises. And because of the challenges, because small and medium-sized businesses really don't have the capacity to make microbiological testing or stability testing in-house. We do have laboratories both in United Kingdom and in Finland where we are doing those tests that are legally required.
What advice would you have for new people who are entering the industry? Where are the areas that you see as interesting or as having opportunity for new people?
There is a huge growth in the private label sectors. There are needs for persons who would be able to work in the contract manufacturers, develop formulations, come up with new product ideas for the private label. That's one big market right now. And because the economical situation looks what it looks right now, people are not stopping to buy shampoo. They are not stopping using deodorant. They are just, switching to a cheaper brand. Mm-hmm. And those are quite often private label brands. So there's a lot of opportunity in there. And if you happen to be in Europe or even in the United States, if you have the possibility to take a university course in toxicology, dermatology, or the like, that would be an asset because the regulations are tightening all the time. And if you have some kind of background information about the dermatology or the toxicology, that would help you. And I'm not saying that you should, be a toxicologist, but just understand the basic concepts in the field.
Yeah, that's excellent advice, and that's not an area that people typically will get in university or in really continuing education courses. We don't see a lot of toxicology.
Yeah, it's pretty scarce. This spring I was taking an advanced course at VUB University in Belgium, which was only about the safety assessment and toxicology of the cosmetic products. We had 1 week course, which was 8 to 10 hours every day with practical exercises and things like that. And we were just concentrating on the toxicology aspects because those are really important with the new legislations. And I do believe that because there have been proposals for the Safe Cosmetics Act in the United States as well, and there have been recommendations or ideas that why don't we copy some of the European community regulations. It might not happen overnight, but in the long run, there probably will be demand for toxicological aspects in the product development as well.
Absolutely, and I know the regulations in the United States, there's a lot of pressure to change them, and they'll likely be changed sometime, but there's a lot of forces against change, so we'll see. Things move slow in America.
Yeah, and then, if you like something else, it's marketing is always, you usually can get courses in marketing if you are more market oriented, because that's very important aspect in the cosmetic industry, because it's in the end it's about selling products, and so to be able to understand a little bit about marketing and the consumer behavior might be an asset for you in formulating new products.
Yeah, certainly understanding what kind of products consumers like is a good thing for cosmetic chemists.
Absolutely. And and sometimes you really have to, even as a cosmetic chemist, learn something about the customers. That was perhaps not the most managed thing I've done in my life, But I actually had to, when I was delving deep into the color cosmetics, I actually did a course, half a year course, to be a makeup artist, because I didn't have a clue how to apply eyeshadow or what to expect from the lipstick, because those were completely unfamiliar things for me. So then I ended up, I've not done a single day of that work, but it sure helped me to formulate better eyeshadows.
Yeah,
then I can just test them on my hand and say, no, it's not good. It's not working the way it should.
Yeah, exactly. No, that would certainly be helpful for cosmetic chemists. And actually, if you could ever spend some time learning to style people's hair and things, that's another thing that would be helpful.
Absolutely, because then you learn what kind of products work, what do not, and then you can, you know, read the ingredients list and work on from there.
Exactly. And finally, where do you see the future of cosmetic chemists? Like, how are things going to be different, or how are things do you see changing in the next few years?
I would say the first thing, and I'm very surprised, this market is not being catered for too much. It would be senior citizens, because, you know, we have a huge aging happening in all the Western countries, because the baby boomers are in a couple of years going to be on a pension. And they are persons who they're used to spending some money on themselves. And if you go to any supermarket, or actually any even a luxury store, prestige store, you hardly see any 80 plus cosmetics in there. And for example, Finland will be one of the first countries, because in 2015, about 30% of our population will be actually pensioners. But there is no, you have 30% market, but you have no products for them. There is nothing, zero, because it usually stops with big brand names. It usually stops around 60. If you are looking at the, you know, they put the nice little maps from starting from 20 or from teenage years, they usually end up around 60. So a lot of cosmetic companies seem to think that there's no life after 60 or 70.
Right.
And because there are real practical problems, because, well, my parents always say that don't say that because it's not polite, but, you know, old people do smell. And there are completely scientific reasons for that, because the profile of the acid mantle on the skin is changing a little bit. And so the fatty acids go rancid much more faster. So there is actually a scientific reason, and with the scientific reason you can also provide some solutions and answers for the problem. And the other one would be teenagers, because they are, with the senior citizens, they are actually the other group that has the most money at their disposal, because they are robbing almost every cent from their parents.
Yeah.
And especially in there, because, you know, the male skincare sector, it's really small still compared to the other markets. And I would imagine that the teenager male skincare sector would be an excellent place to start the growth and start the brand awareness.
Those are definitely a few areas where the cosmetic industry could grow.
Yeah, and if we are talking about the longer future, well, in the near future, I think there is no chance that we could match the surgical procedures. For example, nutraceuticals, like cosmetics and pills, are one of branch that a lot of specialists talk about. But those lead to question, you know, what is really cosmetics, what cosmetic is supposed to do, and what you as a cosmetic company legally can do. So we, in the future, with those in mind, we might have more borderline situations between the cosmetics and the pharmaceutical products.
Yeah, that will certainly be a challenge in the future.
Then we have a lot of great new raw materials coming, especially, you know, the biotechnology, nanotechnology, and what I find very interesting are the polymer technology that is advancing a lot. There is a lot of potential in that field. I was just actually yesterday I was playing in the lab with a photochromic polymers that are changing the color in response to the light. So you can actually make a cosmetic formulation, color cosmetic formulation that is adjusting the tone in response to the light, because you need a little bit darker foundation when you are on a bright sunlight. But when you are having a candlelight dinner, you don't require that heavy coverage.
Right. It's self-adjusting cosmetics. Very, very cool technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for coming to the show, Alex. If somebody wanted to get in contact with you, how would they do that?
Well, if somebody wants to contact me, I can be reached by our website at www.cosmarts.com or send me an email at alex@cosmarts.com. I will be happy to answer all the questions.
All right, great. I will include a link in the show notes. But thanks again for coming to the program, Alex.
Thank you very much, Perry. It was a pleasure.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show. As always, thanks for listening. It's people like you that make this show worth doing, and I really appreciate you for listening. Just a couple of announcements. Be sure to sign up for the natural/green formulating course that is now being offered through OliRed. This is a 9-lesson course that covers all that you would need to know to create cosmetic formulas that will be considered green in the cosmetic marketplace. It's an excellent program, and students will have access to cosmetic professionals who have spent their career formulating and investigating in this area. If you are concerned about formulating natural, and that's a huge part of the market these days, then you'll benefit a lot from taking this course. Next Tuesday, January 10th, 2012, is the Midwest SCC dinner meeting, so be sure to check out MidwestSCC.org website for more details. Also, on May 31st, I will be giving a live course on beginning cosmetic chemistry at the mid-year SCC meeting in Charleston, South Carolina. I will also be giving a breakfast seminar the next day as part of the mid-year scientific meeting. It should be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. So do sign up. You can do that at the National SCC website, which is scconline.org. So sign up, or at least stop by and say hello if you are in the area. I'd love to meet with you. As always, please go to the Cosmetic Science Forum and participate in discussions about cosmetic science and chemistry. We've got over 550 members now, and there are some interesting topics being discussed. You can get there from the main website on ChemistCorner.com. If you appreciate the work we do here on Chemist Corner, the best way for you to help is to follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook, or send us an email and tell us that you appreciate it. We love to get emails here at Chemist Corner. Thanks, everybody. Now, go make a difference.